the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. I'm your host, Jess Root, from CardsWire.com, the USA Today NFL wire site that covers, of course, your Arizona Cardinals. And we are in the midst of the opponent preview series, where we're doing 14 shows in hopefully 14 days, talking to writers, reporters that cover the opponents of the Arizona Cardinals in 2024. In this edition of the show, the focus is on the Carolina Panthers, the Cardinals' opponent, on the road in Week 16. And helping me with that is a friend of the show, Natalie Miller. You can find her work actually all over the NFL Wire. Natalie writes for Panthers Wire. You can see Natalie's work as well on Draft Wire and Touchdown Wire. And are there any other wire sites you're also writing for?
I write for the Panthers Wire, Touchdown Wire, and Draft Wire.
Okay, so we got that's two more sites. That's not one more, because I don't do the NFL Wires. I do Cardinals Wire, and then I also do Sportsbook Wire, but that's a different world. Natalie, which actually a little bit optimistic about the Cardinals, wrote the piece that said that Cardinals are a super sleeper team this year. So Natalie's a friend of the show. So let's talk about the Carolina Panthers. 2023 was a rough year. There was a lot of intrigue going into that year, kind of as a year one rebuild. You've got a respected head coach in Frank Reich, a guy that I have always been a Frank Reich fan. I thought that he should have been in contention for other jobs that, like, in when the Cardinals were hiring, I think in 2018, I wondered why he wasn't in the mix. You draft have the number one pick overall in Bryce Young, but then things just don't go well. They lose their first six games, then they lose another six in a row after interestingly enough, you know, beating C.J. Stroud. And then going in a total 2-15 on the season, the worst team in the league, 31st out of 32nd, second to last in offensive points scored, dead last in yards. They were technically a good defense, but not a good defense at the same time, because they were a top five team in yards, but 29th in points allowed. Tell me about that. How is that possible? One, what made 2023 what 2023 was for the Panthers?
I mean, where do you even start? David Tepper sort of, you know, is not known for his patience. So he thought he would have a genius idea of bringing in a bunch of different coaches with different coaching styles, different schemes, different systems. So from the start, it's almost like you feel like when the season started, you're like, okay, these are all good coaches. In a vacuum, that's true. But when you have all these different coaches come together and try to make a same scheme with players that don't fit the scheme and it doesn't really work, and then you've had the problem of our drafting and you just haven't hit on anything, so your depth is terrible, and it was almost like doom from the start. Even though, you know, there was some intrigue going in the season, like you said, it fell flat really fast as soon as we lost two of our interior guys, and we were essentially putting practice squad players at right guard and left guard. And then our center, his play just dropped. So our interior offensive line was, I would say, the worst I've ever seen in Carolina Panthers history.
Which is definitely not what you want when you have a not tall rookie mobile quarterback. If that probably would have been the absolute worst thing that could have happened for Bryce Young.
Yeah, it was a disaster, because you have interior pressure in his face right away and he's not able to see over that. So in the offensive system, you try to get the ball out quick. Who are you getting it out quick to? And there's a defensive lineman in your face. So you're asking Bryce Young to scramble and break tackles, but he's not built to do that. So it was just a recipe for disaster as soon as our interior line fell apart.
How was it that the Panthers could be so good in yards allowed, but allow almost the most points in the league?
Well, when the offense doesn't move the ball, then the field position for the other team is usually pretty great, and we turn the ball over a bunch. So, you know, you have a good field position for the other team, but you're not really stopping anybody in the red zone. The defense, like, just on tape was okay, but they were just so often on the field and so often put in bad positions that, like, asking any defense to do anything with that is just a recipe for disaster.
Yeah, for sure. What did you think of the play of Bryce Young? Obviously, at how he looked, only 11 touchdown passes, 10 interceptions. He was sacked almost the most in the league. Sam Howell was sacked 65 times to lead the NFL. Young was sacked 62 times. They didn't have a 1,000-yard rusher. They did get 1,000 yards from Adam Thielen, but averaging less than 10 yards a catch. What did you see? How would you evaluate Young's rookie year? Obviously, you were telling me before the show, people are already done. There's a good chunk of fans already done with him. You know, he's a bust. Honestly, I've heard the same thing here. People think anytime you get a midget quarterback, people don't believe in them. And so if there's any adversity at all, they get loud.
I wouldn't say it's like a throwaway trying to evaluate his tape, but it's close to that, because you wonder, like, any quarterback functioning behind that offensive line and receivers that are DJ Chark and Adam Thielen, who cannot separate. I mean, Thielen did good separation, like, in the slot, but there's not much to push the ball deep, and, like, he wasn't even asked to because they have pressure in his face constantly. So there's only like two or three games where you're really looking at the tape and you're saying, okay, here's what Bryce Young is doing well, here's what he's not doing well, without his supporting cast crumbling around him. Did he play perfect? No, there's no shot you could even come close to that. But there's games like against Houston and against Green Bay where you can look at his tape and you can say, there's clearly something there. But there's other times where you're like, this dude has a long way to go, because, like, his footwork wasn't clean and he just didn't have the ability to push the ball deep even when he was protected at times. So there's concerns, but there's also, I wouldn't give up on Bryce Young. I think he's going to be a good quarterback.
Sounds good. Any other, was there any positives that came out of last season? Any highlights at all?
I think Derek Brown had, like, an incredibly underrated season. I thought he was right up there with, like, Dexter Williams and Chris Jones. Like, he was a monster in the interior, and he partly kept that.
103 tackles from the interior? That's absurd.
This tape is just monstrous. Like, there's dudes triple teaming him and he's just blowing through them. There's nothing you can do to stop him. And I think he's super undersung as far as, like, interior defensive players goes. I think he's one of the best in the league.
And that was, you know, it took him a little bit, but yeah, the sack production obviously wasn't quite, but when you get 103 tackles and 103 tackles from the interior position and only 7 of them for loss, that's really interesting. That means he was not only he was getting off the ball, but then having to pursue like a linebacker. Yeah. That's wild.
It didn't help that his defensive ends, including Brian Burns, were not, like, super productive on the edges, and they did not play contain well, and they did not get to the quarterback. It was a group effort on the defensive line, and Derek Brown and Shy Tuttle were really the only ones that were getting the job done.
Let's leave that season alone. Then coming in next on the Rise Up Here podcast, Mr. Cardinals talking about. Let's move on and look at the off season. There's been changes. That's coming next on Rise Up Here. We're back on the Rise Up Here podcast, Mr. Cardinals talk on the web. It starts with, and we didn't even talk about the fact that Frank Reich got fired mid season of his first season, and wow. But going back to that, was the job that Reich did that bad that he needed to be replaced without even being given his next season?
Once you see Bryce Young regress as a quarterback and you hired Frank Reich with the idea of being a quarterback guru, you have to act fast, because Tepper is a stock man. He sees something fall, he's like, I got to get rid of this stock. And it doesn't work the same in football, but it's one of the few times I'm like, okay, I agree with Tepper on this move. This clearly is a dysfunctional organization. Like, you cannot have your rookie quarterback regress in a season where he needs to show something to be able to go into year two, year three.
And so they hire Dave Canales, They retain Ejiro Evero for the defense, so there is continuity there. What did you think of the hiring of Canales? Do you think that he has what it takes to not only lead a team but help get Bryce Young on track?
It's hard to say. I was definitely on the Ben Johnson hype train, so Dave Canales was sort of off my radar when we made the hire, but I've done a lot of research on him and seen what he did in Seattle with Geno Smith and seen what he did with Baker Mayfield. There's definitely like reason for hope, and you watch his offensive design. It's certainly interesting. I like how he progresses throughout the season, because that's what we missed last year. We're like, changes in the offense. There was nothing. It was just do the same thing over and over again and hope for the best. But Dave Canales constantly made adjustments on what he was wanting to do, and he always had like a theory on how he wanted to do it, but he was always willing to change, and that's super nice. And I think he fits the vibe of Charlotte pretty well.
So we come back to free agency. I mean, the biggest move of the offseason, I think, for the Panthers is when they trade Brian Burns. Was there any avoiding that? Was there ever going to be a good ending to the Brian Burns situation?
If you got in a time machine and traded him to the Los Angeles Rams for 2 first-round picks, sure.
But in free agency, aside from Burns, is there any loss from last season, any off-season losses that will be impactful, that'll be impact losses?
Not really. No, it seems like mostly Carolina's overhauled their roster more than anything. They sort of cut the fat, to be blunt.
Well, the Cardinals went through this twice in the last few years, because it felt like after 2018, the Steve Wilks year, that the Cardinals were actively just trying to just get rid of all the stink of the 2018 year. So it didn't matter. Even the players who did pretty well, like Josh Bynes was a linebacker, had a pretty decent season. I'm like, nope, they're not bringing it. They basically tried to eliminate the stink of that year. They did the same thing this last year. So basically everything from 2022, they overhauled the roster completely. And they spent the most money on the offensive interior, adding Robert Hunt and Damian Lewis. Hunt, who was, you could argue, the best lineman that Miami had, and Damian Lewis, who was perhaps the best lineman that Seattle had, both playing in those interior positions. Do you think those moves alone take care of the big problems that the Panthers had last season on the offensive line interior?
On the interior, yes. If they can stay healthy, they still have no depth behind those two starters, which concerns me, because it's still the same guys, Cade Mays and Chandler Zavala, behind those two. So if it's like, if one of those dudes goes down, you're putting yourself back into that problem. The other problem along the offensive line last year was Ike Ekwonu, who really struggled in that Frank Reich system, and he regressed a lot. And I do think he'll do better with the shorter setups with Dave Canales, and he fits that scheme better, but it's not like that's a red flag that just goes away because you have a new head coach. If Ike Ekwonu is going to struggle, then Bryce Young is going to struggle again, even with the upgrades to the interior offensive line.
The defensive additions include A'shaun Robinson, Jadeveon Clowney, Josie Jewell, cornerback Dane Jackson, safety Jordan Fuller. They do a lot. The talent looks like it's definitely upgraded. A'shaun Robinson he's not a star, but he is a solid interior defender against the run. That pairing with him and Derrick Brown should be nice. And then you add, now Jadeveon Clowney's old, but he's also coming off one of his more prolific sack years in several years. And DJ Wonnum as well, an underrated pass rusher who played for Minnesota. How much do you think those guys impact the defense in this coming season under Ejiro Evero?
I mean, it's hard to get much worse than the pass rush was last year. Burns was not like horrible, but outside of him, there's just no depth. So adding guys, like you said, A'shaun Robinson and Jadeveon Clowney, it's going to be better because they're good players. Just signing good veteran players and trusting your one of the best defensive coordinators in the NFL seems like a recipe for success, especially when you get J.C. Horn back, who, when he's healthy, he's a top 10 cornerback.
What other additions do you think will impact the 2024 season? In free agency, at least.
I like Dane Jackson from Buffalo. I think he's really good. Troy Hill is another underrated guy that they brought back in, and I think he's going to fit really well at that nickel spot. They retained Xavier Woods, which I thought was a good move because he was one of the better safeties last year. I just think this defense as a whole is going to mesh really well. Like, they all seem to have their strengths within this Evero system. And I think Jadeveon Clowney is hopefully going to build upon last year, but it's still going to lack the sack production you want, but you kind of just want this defense to just bend, not break.
Well, and one thing that has always been very good about Clowney's game is that even before he was getting much in terms of sacks, he was always very productive in the run game, very strong against the run, and very disciplined. And if that's what you were missing last year, that will help things immensely. We move on to the draft. The Panthers originally didn't have a first-round pick, but move into the first round to land South Carolina's Xavier Leggett. Round two, they get Jonathan Brooks. They get Trevon Wallace for their third-round pick. Those three guys, are those the three guys that you anticipate making an impact in year one? How good do you think Xavier Leggett can be?
Well, to rewind it for a second, going back to free agency, a guy we totally missed on was Deontay Johnson from Pittsburgh, who's going to be our X receiver. He's going to help out Leggett and Thielen a lot. You sort of have these designated roles now for each of these receivers. As far as Jonathan Brooks and Jatavion Sanders go, I'm not sure how much of an impact Sanders is going to make right now. It seems like Tommy Trimble is the locked-in certified starter, but Brooks does a lot of things that the Carolina Panthers are missing last year. Well, Chuba is like a fine pass catcher, and he's a fine runner. He doesn't do anything exceptional. And as soon as Brooks is healthy, I expect him to just be the lockdown full-time starter, and he's going to get a lot of catches, a lot of runs. The offense is going to run through him.
And then on day three, cornerback Chowade Smith, D-tackle Jaden Crumity, I don't know how you pronounce that, and then linebacker Michael Barrett to round things out. After Brooks, do you expect the rookies to make much of an impact this year, or is this a year where they're leaning on veterans right now?
Definitely a leaning on veterans kind of year. Like, Trevon Wallace is a nice pickup for the linebacker position, but he needs to develop. He's like the linebacker we drafted just last year, who we almost seem to be ready to move off from, and DJ Johnson. But Chowade Smith is good for depth because we don't have much corner depth besides the three veterans that are starting. So it more comes off to me as developmental and depth.
Coming next on the Rise Up Syria podcast, the best start of Cardinals talk on the way. Let's move on and talk about the upcoming season. What is expected from the Panthers in 2024? That's coming next on Rise Up Syria. We're back on the Rise Up Syria podcast, the best start of talk. Cardinals talk on the web, talking with Natalie Miller from Panthers Wire, Touchdown Wire, Draft Wire, but here talking about the Carolina Panthers. 2024, what is this year going to be about? What we thought last year was rebuild year one, right? Is it just a reset? How much better do you think this Panthers team can be?
It's a year of expectations. It's what your expectations, not for this year, but for next year. You're setting the bar. Like, okay, what do we see out of this Dave Canales offense? What are we seeing out of Bryce Young? What direction do we need to go in next year? Because we have this talent around Bryce now. We fixed this offensive line. We gave him weapons. We upgraded our defense. So this is not a team that's going to just say, we're going to rebuild. It's fine. It's a team that's going to compete and see where it needs to go for the future. And the talent on this roster is way better than last year's. Even if off the bat, it seemed like last year's roster was okay, it ultimately ended up being just a nightmare roster with tons of players who are just not returning. So I think as long as Dave Canales can show some improvement with Bryce Young and is able to sort of show, hey, this team can compete and I'm the guy to take it in the right direction and Bryce Young is the quarterback, then I think that's what you're looking for this year.
I do have an interesting stretch on the schedule from weeks 9 to 13 where you have essentially four home games in a row, split two home games, the bye week, and two more home games. The first two, which look kind of definitely winnable against the Saints and Giants. Then you come off of the bye to play the Chiefs and then you get the Bucks at home, which will be that'll be Canales's, you know, his revenge game. He wasn't fired, but it's the first time he gets to go up against his former club, and those are always interesting matchups in that sense. What do you think it would be obviously two wins is never acceptable, but say the Cardinals last year in 2022, they went 4-13. They fired everyone. New staff, kind of rebuilding the roster. They still only won four games, but the way we felt about 2023 was way different than the way we felt about 2022. Is that sort of the sentiment for the Panthers in 2024, even if they, like, two wins is bad, but say it's four or five wins, doesn't the way they win, the aesthetic of the wins, it matters more than the number of wins, right?
You know, normally this would be an easy conversation to have, but with any other NFL owner, but David Tepper is the way David Tepper is. And if he looks at the schedule and he says, hey, we went 4-13, you're all fired, even though Bryce Young improved, like, that wouldn't be shocking to me at all. But for me, as an analyst and as a fan, I want to see Bryce Young look like an NFL quarterback consistently. And I want the team to show that they're willing to fight. And I want to see Dave Canales put together that, oh, he's the offensive guru. Our offense needs to not finish in the bottom 10. Our offense needs to show some light and some why you hire Dave Canales. Like, what is this offense going to look like? The defense is going to be good no matter what. Like, Jiro Everett might be a head coach the next season, but this offense is the main focus, including Bryce Young. If Bryce Young falls flat on his face and they win four games, it wouldn't be surprising to see Dave Canales fire.
Wow. That, you know, that does make hard for a franchise to, if you're firing coaches mid-year and then after 1 year, that's a hard team to get a good candidate for. So hopefully that doesn't happen. What do you think is the ceiling for this team? Best case scenario, what do you think that this team can achieve in terms of wins?
I'm known as a bit of a Carolina Panthers optimist and a bit of a homer. And I look at this roster.
I know how that goes. Trust me.
and I look at the division they play in, and I don't see a team that I'm real scared of. Atlanta was going good, but that dumpster fire of a draft pick really just set them back, and their defense still is not respectable. I think your biggest threat is Tampa Bay. And if you took away their offensive guru, hypothetically, it's not far-fetched to say with improvement from Bryce Young that this team could be a playoff team, maybe a 9-win playoff team, but a playoff team nonetheless.
Only the NFC South can do.
Yes.
Those 500 and below 500 Panthers division championships under Ron Rivera. Everyone
7-8-1.
Woo! And then they beat the Cardinals that year. Oh, never mind.
Sure
never
did.
Let's not remember those years, because those
were that was that the John Skelton year, or was that the Ryan Finley year?
That was the Ryan Lindley year, because, you know, Carson Palmer went down, then Drew Stanton went down, and we were left that season. And that's one of the greatest what if seasons. We had a potential Super Bowl caliber team wasted on Ryan Lindley. And I like Ryan Lindley, and so I hate to say it, but like, that season was wasted on a Ryan Lindley. And that was sad. And
that was a blood in the water game if I've ever seen one.
Oh my gosh, it was a funny thing, because the Panthers tried to lose that game too. They tried to lose that game, but the Cardinals were that bad. Oh my gosh.
They should.
Oh, and so 8-win, maybe 9 wins is their ceiling. What is their floor? What is their reasonable floor? Not like everyone gets hurt, but like, it's a disappointing and things don't go well.
I don't think it's possible to hit the 2-win mark again. Don't quote me on that. I don't want to be wrong on that. But
I'm going to save that roster clip right there. You can't win. They can't win only two games this year.
Their roster's too good to win just two games, barring like a Bryce Young meltdown. I would probably say their floor is the 4-win game.
Okay.
Or 4-win. Their schedule is kind of tough. Like, it's reasonable to think 4 wins is a thing.
They do have a nice stretch in the second half where they have six of seven games are at home, which is really weird how that Because they go,
if they can't win two of those, I'm done.
And so ultimately, do you think this is kind of a 5-7 win team, reasonable expectations?
I did the record prediction for them, and I had them at 7-10.
Ooh, you are the optimist. You are the optimist. How do you view that game against the Cardinals? It's their last home game of the year, going into the Christmas weekend right there. At home against the Cardinals, and the Cardinals just have not been able to do anything against the Panthers in recent years, basically since they ruined Jake Delhomme. They ruined Jake Delhomme, and then that was it. They couldn't beat the Panthers after that.
The Jake Delhomme curse. Yeah, it's funny. I look at every time we've talked, it's like Carolina builds their team to beat the Arizona Cardinals. Like, if that's how I could map it out, it's like, hey, we're going to beat the Arizona Cardinals. And I think it's no different this year, where, like I wrote in my piece about the Cardinals, they're going to be a run first, run second, run third, run fourth kind of team. And they're going to run the ball down your throat, and they're going to play real strong defense. And we built our defense to stop the run. We're going to make teams beat us through the air, which I don't know if that's conducive when your offense doesn't match that, but you're going to have a tough time running against them, and they're going to try to make teams one-dimensional. But Kyler Murray is a good quarterback. I'm with you. I think Kyler Murray is a really good franchise quarterback. And, you know, if you can't put pressure on him, he's going to put the ball down the field. But with Derek Brown and A'shaun Robinson in the middle of the defense pressuring the interior, it might give Kyler Murray a little bit of a fit.
Do you view that game so it's kind of an even matchup, where you would say it's not necessarily like you pencil in a win, but you don't see it as a team that, oh, we might lose that game, they're fairly evenly matched?
Yeah, I would say it's evenly matched. I think our roster is a little better well-rounded, but I think your quarterback is way better than ours right now.
and this point, it should be. Kyle's been paid a lot. I'm a big believer in Kyler Murray, but we'll see how that goes. So there we have it. Natalie expecting the Panthers to be roughly a 7-win team. So, and with best case scenario, we could see a classic NFC South, barely 500, sub 500 division title. The NFC South created that. I don't think that's going to happen that way. I am bullish on Atlanta simply because of Kirk Cousins, because that team won 7 games with Desmond Ridder and Taylor Heineke, and Kirk Cousins is so immensely better. And I think, I looked at the roster in Atlanta, and I was thinking, their talent says they should be better, but the quarterback play was holding them back. It was like kind of the opposite of Houston's. When you look at the roster, like, there's nothing scary about that roster, and then CJ Stroud elevates it. I like Kirk Cousins that much. I don't think they're going to run away. I don't think they'll be winning like 12, 13 games, but I personally think that they're going to probably be a 10-11 win team and will be the favorite in the NFC South. But the NFC South is weird. As you well know, it's a weird place to play football.
Yes, definitely. With the Saints pushing the cap back every single year, they're guaranteed to finish with 8 wins, so that you can pencil that in.
And they got the, like, Derek Carr, bless his heart, he's the most mid quarterback in the NFL.
It's the definition of a mid quarterback. When you look it up on Wikipedia, his picture comes up. I agree.
All right, and with that, we will end this edition of the Rise of Sea-Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. We'll be talking Carolina Panthers. The Cardinals will be on the road in Carolina on December 22nd in Week 16. Hopefully, we can get Natalie back on to talk leading up to that game in a few months from now. Thank you so much for the time on the show, and we will be back again soon. Find Natalie's work all over the NFL Wire. You can find it on Panthers Wire. You can find it on Draft Wire. You can find it on Touchdown Wire. I referenced a couple of Natalie's pieces on Draft Wire and Touchdown Wire just in the last couple of weeks. So all over. Natalie is all over the place. Thank you for your time. That'll wrap up this end of the show, this bit of the show, and we will be back again soon. Thanks for listening, as always.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up Sea Red.